All positive natural health programs on HRNradio.com.
Green blessings. This is Susan Weed, the voice of the Wise Woman tradition and the author of the Wise Woman Herbal Series, welcoming you to HealthyLife.net. Thanks for tuning in for another hour of green blessings from the green art of Susan Weed to you. I read widely from the strictly scientific all the way out to the edgy fringes, looking for the best, most reliable, most inclusive, and most up-to-date health information just for you, so you can maintain and regain optimum, abundant, joyous health. Join me each and every month for wise advice on herbs and health with a special emphasis on women. Together we will reweave the healing cloak of the ancients and reclaim herbal medicine as people's medicine. In 2017 and 2018, we explored adaptogens. This is the last month of our two-year series of looking at adaptogens, herbs that help us to live longer and healthier lives. Well, you know what? It doesn't really matter a whole lot if you live a longer or healthier life if you fall down and break your bones. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, one of my favorite government organizations. They, like, really are out there telling the truth about stuff. They decided to examine whether there were any primary prevention approaches that were safe and effective for people age 65 and up. As you know, falling and breaking yourself is one of the main reasons that older people wind up being dependent on others. The three strategies they looked at were vitamin D, exercise, and a multifactorial approach. The vitamin D trials didn't look good. In fact, there were more falls in women who received vitamin D, particularly at high doses. All in all, when the data was pulled together, there was no benefit from taking vitamin D supplementation when it came to the incidence of falls or death. Furthermore, they found there were quite a few potential harms from vitamin D supplements, especially at high doses, including kidney stones, high blood calcium levels, high urine calcium levels, and high blood sugar levels. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force does not recommend taking vitamin D to help prevent falls. They looked at 21 clinical trials with about over 7,000 subjects looking at balance and functional training, resistance training, flexibility exercises, endurance training, and a small but statistically significant reduction in the risk of falling did occur among those who did any of those kinds of exercise. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force recommends that you exercise if you want to stay nimble and spry. Now, falling results, of course, from a number of body system failures, and so the multifactorial approach looks at all of those: exercise, psychology, diet, education, medication management, incontinence management, environmental modification, physical and occupational therapy, social services, and specialist consultations, eyes, ears, nerves, heart. An analysis of data pooled from all 26 trials that they found that the multifactorial approach did reduce the number of falls, but not the number of subjects who had a fall or the number of subjects who had a fracture. So what's your best bet is any kind of exercise. Thank you, U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. How about vitamin D and mood? New Zealand researchers randomly assigned 152 healthy women aged 18 to 40 to take either vitamin D or placebo once a month, and after 6 months, there was no difference in depression, anxiety, or mood scores between the two groups. You have probably heard me mention off and on that I took part in a great study called the Vital Study. And the Vital Study enrolled, I think, probably over 6,000 healthy adults looking to see if taking vitamin D and or fish liver oil would improve outcomes. And no. Those who took vitamin D definitely had an upswing in vitamin D in their blood in the Vital Study, but they did not have any health benefits from taking that vitamin D. The results have not gotten deep enough into that to see if there were any negative effects at this point. But B vitamins researchers examined 8 trials that gave large doses of B vitamins to more than 37,000 people. Most for about 5 years. All 8 trials used folic acid, and 7 tested B12 and 6 tested B6. The difference in overall cancer rates between those taking the B vitamins and those taking the placebos, zip. The difference in energy levels, metabolism, not a thing. If you've been listening to me over the years, you already know my take on vitamin supplements, and that is there is no supplement in the world that is going to improve your health. And every single one of them, especially at high doses, can have a very bad effect on your health. Instead of vitamin supplements, let's use adaptogens. I'll be right back with some very interesting American adaptogens.
The Bright Side of Talk. HealthyLife.net.
Adaptogens. Herbs that help us adapt to stress and live longer and healthier lives. Herbs that give us more energy and help prevent chronic problems like dementia, diabetes, and heart attack. Wow! Hooray for adaptogens. We've spent the past 2 years looking at adaptogens. We started with the classic adaptogens from the far side of the planet from us. And as we've moved through 2017 and 2018, we've gotten closer and closer to home. And this month, or last month with adaptogens, we're going to look at 3 special roots that grow in North and South America. You're not going to classically find them in books about adaptogens, because the people who are looking at adaptogens have so far been Chinese and Russian people. But as more American herbalists start to become interested and grow deeply interested in adaptogens, these 3 herbs, Devil's Club, Solomon's Seal, and Sarsaparilla, have been gaining in esteem, especially for those who live where they grow. All 3 of these roots are rhizomous. In other words, we're not looking at a root like a burdock root or a carrot root. We're looking at a root more like a ginseng root, but even more rhizomaceous than ginseng. And when we are harvesting perennial plants that have a root that is a rhizome, and the rhizome, probably the rhizome you're most familiar with is ginger. If you've ever seen ginger growing, there's actually little roots growing out from it, and it's the rhizome that you harvest, and you can see where the shoots poke out from the rhizome. Because these plants are somewhat rare, Devil's Club, Solomon's Seal, and Sarsaparilla, the sarsaparilla being the least rare of them and with absolutely huge roots, it is good to think about really being exacting in our harvesting. With the Devil's Club, it turns out that the stem of the plant is just as effective as the root, so we can actually leave that root in situ. We don't have to disturb the root at all and just harvest the stem. And with Solomon's Seal, which is the rarest of the 3 plants, it's very important to come back from the growing edge of the rhizome, at least halfway back, the length of the rhizome, and take only the back half of that rhizome. I've harvested bloodroot and wild ginger in that way, seeing the patches where I harvest and where I return regularly grow and thrive because of that. So these are not plants that are generally commercially grown, although I have seen Solomon's Seal for sale in herbal shops and even in grocery stores in Chinatown. So while it is the one that is the scarcest in the wild, it is also the one that might be the easiest to get. When I checked out Devil's Club root, it was selling for $50 a pound, so it's a fairly expensive herb. All of these rhizome roots contain substances known as phytosterols. That literally translates as plant hormones. Phytosterols are unsaturated compounds that occur, especially in plant fats. One of the most interesting of them is stigmasterol. Stigmasterol is also known as the Wolzen anti-stiffness factor, and it was discovered by University of California physiologist Rosalind Wolzen. It is found in the oil of soybeans and in canola oil, also in medicinal herbs, including several Chinese herbs, American ginseng, devil's club, and sarsaparilla. Also found in vegetables, legumes, nuts, seeds, and unpasteurized milk. It turns out that stigmasterol, the anti-stiffness factor, is inactivated by pasteurization. I know that Dr. Price found a compound, especially in butter, that he called an anti-stiffness factor. I wonder what the connection is here. Stigmasterol is a precursor suitable for the manufacture of semi-synthetic progesterone. And the Upjohn Company has used stigmasterol as the starting raw material for the commercial synthesis of cortisone. Research tells us that stigmasterol may be useful in the prevention of certain kinds of cancers, ovarian, prostate, breast, and colon. And studies have found that diets high in phytosterols inhibit the absorption of cholesterol and lower serum cholesterol levels. Studies with the laboratory animals that were fed stigmasterol found that both cholesterol and testosterol absorption decreased by 25 to 30% over a six-week period. Stigmasterol is a potent antioxidant, hypoglycemic, and thyroid-affecting plant. Because stigmasterol is a precursor of anabolic steroids, it is sometimes thought that plants containing this can be used by bodybuilders, but it turns out that our bodies are not that good in converting it. In addition to the plants we're going to be looking at tonight, which contain stigmasterol and American ginseng, Romania, Blooperum, Paphia, and Black Cohosh are notable for their high levels of stigmasterol. So let's jump right in and see what these three plants offer us. We're going to get back to a little bit more to compounds and what's going on in these plants with the last segment of our show, where we're going to wrap up and take a broad look at what exactly is an adaptogen. Devil's Club, Oplopanax horridus. Panax horridum, Echinopanax horridum, and Fostia horrida. Are you getting the idea? This plant is horrid? You're right. It's sometimes called Alaskan ginseng, tinklet aspirin, devil's walking stick, or Kukilnarpak, which means large plant with needles. It grows in moist ravines. It must be growing in water, although the soil needs to be able to drain well. It grows all along the Alaska coast and up to 100 miles inland and on islands in Lake Superior. Devil's Club is a thorny plant, and that's why it's called Devil's Club, and it can form impenetrable thickets. The thorny plants are usually, you know, 3 to 4 feet high, but in really good situations, they can get up to 15 feet high. The natives of Alaska and British Columbia understood it to be an absolutely magical plant that imparted enormous strength to the user and that linked us to the spirit world, that it was a strong and powerful portal into the spirit world, especially of the plants. And that if you were to hang a piece of Oplopanax in your doorway, your home would be absolutely protected. Remember that you're going to need some protection if you go out to harvest this plant. The entire plant is covered with very spiny thorns, which really are quite irritating, and you don't want to get yourself irritated or scratched by them. Also, while you're out there, don't eat the berries. They are not considered safe. Devil's Club grows very slowly. It takes a long time before it starts to reproduce, and it must grow in dense, moist, old-growth coniferous forests. So, wow! A plant, you know, United Plant Savers calls it a plant that if we take good care of it, we will have lots and lots of it for future generations. And if we don't, it might disappear. What can we do? Use the stalk instead of the roots. Stalk has exactly the same properties. 2 to 3% volatile oil, 7% triterpene saponins. Remember that, triterpene saponins, because we're going to get back to it at the end of the show. It also contains 4 sesquiterpenes, lignans, including stigmasterol and beta-sitosterol, lots of minerals, unsaturated fatty acids, saponins, glycerides, flavonoids, coumarin, tannins, and cardiac glycosides. Several books claim that Devil's Club contains no alkaloids, almost as though that made it not poisonous. Listen, glycosides are far more poisonous than alkaloids, and glycosides taste sweet, so you get poisoned sweetly, whereas at least the alkaloids taste bitter, so you have a clue that something is happening. Devil's Club is got lots of antis. It's antioxidant and antipyretic. That means it cools things down. It's antitussive. It calms down coughs. Anti-rheumatic, anti-cholesteremic, anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, antiviral, antibacterial, and very strongly antifungal. It's also an analgesic and a local antiseptic, and it is moistening, moistening, moistening. Devil's Club is considered purgative, emetic, and cathartic in high enough doses, so keep those doses low. Decoction or infusion of the bark or the cambium of the root or the stem, sip as needed, or 25 to 100 drops of the tincture several times a day, or a poultice to reduce swelling, pain, and infection in cuts, burns, contusions, sores, and wounds. Devil's Club is used for all the things that adaptogens are used for. Its specialties are reducing cholesterol and helping people heal after surgery. Like most adaptogens, Devil's Club is known for increasing libido and helping men who are experiencing erectile dysfunction. Like many adaptogens, Devil's Club is directly anti-cancer. When tested against ovarian cancer cell lines and certain breast cancer cell lines, Devil's Club actually stopped proliferation of those cancer cells. Like a great many adaptogens, Devil's Club counters anxiety and depression, increasing mood, and giving a lift to memory as well. And like the vast majority of adaptogens, but especially those that are roots, Devil's Club counters insulin resistance, and that's type 2 diabetes. The root bark, infused in fat or oil, is more effective against psoriasis than hydrocortisone. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Strong scientific studies have found that Devil's Club oil made by infusing the bark of the root in oil or fat is more effective than cortisone against psoriasis. It's really good against joint pain, arthritis pain, rheumatism pain, and any other kinds of skin problems. Give it a try internally against respiratory distress, including flu, colds, coughs, sore throat, chest pain, digestive distress, ulcers, gallstones, indigestion, constipation. Oh, my goodness, no wonder the native people of the northwest part of North America considered Devil's Club not horrid, but amazing. No cases of significant toxicity have been reported. Remember that in large doses, Devil's Club can make you throw up or do all kinds of kind of noxious things to your digestive system. So keep those doses as small as you need to get the effect that you want. I'll be right back to talk about a really interesting plant called sarsaparilla. Oh, look at this. Devil's Club is good for those who feel timid and have mental weakness. It makes one a warrior.
Environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
You know, English is pretty good about not sticking a whole bunch of silent letters in there, but when it comes to the herb sarsaparilla, well, it can be pretty hard to spell. Because it's got a whole syllable in there that you wouldn't think. It's spelled S-A-R-S-A-P-A-R-I-L-L-A. You think it's sarsaparilla? It comes from the Spanish zarzaparilla, which means bramble, and parilla, which means little grapevine. But what we call it is sarsaparilla, right? Sarsaparilla, Honduran sarsaparilla, Jamaican sarsaparilla, and in Hindi, Anantamool. Be careful. This is not Indian sarsaparilla or false sarsaparilla, which is in a totally different family. That's in the Apocyanaceae family, and the only plants that I know in that family are like really poisonous plants. So don't use false sarsaparilla. Be sure that you get Smilax ornata, or Smilax regilli, or Smilax medica. There are, in fact, over 300 unique species of Smilax, pretty much all of which can be used. They're in the lily family. And that false sarsaparilla, remember, it's in a totally different family. So long as it's a Smilax, which is also known as greenbrier, which is what grew around Sleeping Beauty's castle, so long as it's a Smilax, you're on safe grounds. Certainly there's individual differences between those 300 different species. And the ornata, the regilli, and the medica are the ones that are most often used. But so far as we know, all Smilax has good effect. It is a prickly vine. Oh, is it ever a prickly vine? As a matter of fact, many species don't have leaves. That's why it's called green briar. It's just a green stalk with thorns sticking out of it. It grows in my woods where it grows up trees and hangs down in nets. And you better be careful if you are running through the woods. You do not want to run into the green briar. Ouch! You will be scratched. And where it grows down south, down there in South America, in Mexico and the Caribbean and Central and South America, it can get up to 150 feet long in 1 year's growth. And the roots, the enormous tuberous roots, are normally 6 feet long, but can get longer than that even. Oh my goodness, now that is a root, isn't it? A root longer than I am. Wow. And I bet that like the others that we're looking at here in this show, like the Devil's Club and like the Solomon Seal, that this is a tuberous root. It's not a gnarly root. Sarsaparilla was introduced to Europe about 600 years ago. It's one of the first plants brought over from the New World, and it soon became a favorite treatment against another thing brought over from the New World, syphilis. Yes, indeed. It was not only the white people who gave the native people new diseases. The native people gave the white people new diseases, primary among them syphilis. And sarsaparilla, of course, coming from the New World, looked to the old European herbalist like the very thing to kill that syphilis. But nobody wanted to take an anti-syphilitic herb. I mean, come on, how to ruin your reputation? Whoa, nobody wants to party with you if you've got syphilis. So the herbalist made up a new term, and that term was blood cleanser. And blood cleanser was the front for herbs that were anti-syphilitic. I'd always wondered about that from the time I first started studying herbal medicine. What's with this blood cleanser thing, huh? What an odd concept. And I found out about 10 years ago that that's what it means. And as I was doing research for sarsaparilla, I came again across this information that it became known as a blood-cleansing herb because nobody wanted to call it an anti-syphilitic herb. In fact, sarsaparilla was in the U.S. pharmacopoeia from 1820 to 1910 as the primary anti-syphilis agent. Nowadays, it's not in the pharmacopoeia, but the U.S. Food and Drug Administration does recognize it as generally regarded as safe for flavoring foods and drinks. Sarsaparilla tonic was a favorite of the Old West, and it is still a favorite in many places in the world. The taste of sarsaparilla is bland and sweet. It is cooling and drying. It does not have any particular smell or taste. Like most adaptogenic herbs, it is antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. It is antidepressive and anti-rheumatic. It's antifungal, analgesic, aphrodisiac, a diuretic, and a good source of those phytosterols we were talking about before. While we're here, let me mention the word alterative. Alterative is an herbalist word that I was taught means a plant that can gently alter your health. Over the past few years, as I have been opening myself more and more to information about adaptogens and to looking for adaptogens in unusual places, I began to realize that this word alterative was the word that herbalists who didn't know about adaptogens used, and they basically meant pretty much the same thing. An herb that helps us to adapt to stress, an herb that helps us become different, an herb that alters us. And you will find in most books sarsaparilla listed as an alterative, but generally not listed as an adaptogen, because that word wasn't in the vocabulary of the people who were thinking about herbs at that time. Sarsaparilla root is the part that is generally used, a tea of the dried root, a tablespoon, and 2 cups of boiling water, drunk half a cup at a time, or an infusion of the dried root up to a cup a day, of the ground root powder put in food by the half teaspoonful, or 25, 30, 90 drops of the tincture 1 to 3 times a day, a decoction of the leaves several times a day against depression, the root powder applied directly to skin problems, or a fomentation of the fresh leaves to help those with rheumatoid arthritis, skin distresses, psoriasis, colic, digestive problems, acne, tick bite fevers, kidney disease, general physical weakness, autoimmune conditions, lack of sexual desire, impotence, headaches, colds, wounds, coughs, hypertension, pain, joint pain, itching, bacterial infections, toxins challenging the liver. Mexican and Honduran sarsaparillas are the best against syphilis and gonorrhea and still used, and with conventional drugs, still used for treating leprosy. Sold as a natural steroid for performance enhancement, you understand, it's not going to do that. I'll be right back to talk about our next secret adaptogen.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Our third secret adaptogen is Solomon's seal. We've looked at Devil's Club, which grows mostly in the Pacific Northwest, all up along the Alaska coastline with a few outliers. There are islands in Lake Superior. And then at sarsaparilla, a plant with over 300 species that grows basically throughout the world, but the really large varieties that are used generally grow in South America. Solomon's seal grows in the eastern woodlands and into to the Midwest. So we pretty much covered North and South America here with our three secret adaptogens. Hopefully one of them will be in the area where you live, and you can do a little experimenting with one of these and decide for yourself whether or not it's an adaptogen that can be useful for you. Solomon's seal is Polygonatum biflorum, also Polygonatum multiflorum, Polygonatum odoratum, and Polygonatum siberian. The Polygonatum biflorum, the true Solomon seal, is the one that is most often used. There is a false Solomon seal, and people do sometimes use the false Solomon seal. There are all kinds of little tricks about how to tell them apart. And when it's that hard to tell plants apart, well, maybe there's not that much difference. As we saw with the sarsaparilla, which had 300 species, most of those species were used alike. I have not used Solomon's seal, although I had a student, a German student, who just adored it and felt that it was one of the most important herbs. And he took a Green Allies class, and his green ally was Solomon's seal, and he's the one who basically got me interested in it. It's related to Polygonum multiflorum, Foti, or He-Shu-Wu, which we talked about last year, and remember that means old black-haired. The Solomon's seal contains some of those phytosterols we've been talking about, especially tetrahydroxystibulene glucoside. And I have here a Medline article. A tetrahydroxystibulene glucoside effectively prevents apoptosis-induced hair loss. It says the effects of Polygonatum multiflorum against hair loss are widely recognized. So, old black hair, it's supposed to make your hair turn black again. Keep your hair, that's Foti, a close companion to Solomon's seal. And as I mentioned before, I do see Solomon's seal being sold in Chinese stores. I think it's a little easier to get than the Foti. The root has been used medicinally for at least 2,000 years. It does grow in Northern Europe and Siberia as well as North America. And like the other plants that we've been looking at, it is soothing, cooling, and moistening. These are plants that cool and moisten and help so much. Solomon's seal is considered to be the most nourishing of the three and the most building. The taste is mild, slightly sweet, nutty, and very bland. It's an adaptogen, an anti-inflammatory, especially for connective tissue, aphrodisiac, demulcent, diuretic, expectorant, mild sedative, a tonic, and a natural moisturizer. This is the one that, if you get the Polygonatum biflorum, is the rarest, where it's really important to just harvest that back half of the rhizome and leave the growing half in the ground. Three doses a day, whether tea, tincture, infusion, or a combination, is just about right. Use the lowest effective dose of Solomon's seal. Half teaspoon of the dried rhizome, brewed in a cup of hot water for 10 minutes. A tablespoon steeped overnight in a quart of cold water. Remember, it's mucilaginous. You can get more mucilage that way. Or the tincture of the fresh or dried rhizomes, 5 to 30 drops, up to 3 times a day, or a poultice, or a salve. Solomon's seal helps those with trauma, sports injuries, repetitive use injuries, joint injuries, sprains, strains, joint pain, pulled muscles, torn tendons and ligaments, broken bones, burns, bruises, cuts, distressed cartilage, torn anterior cruciate ligaments in the knees, slip discs. Wow. Oh, Solomon's seal helps those with a dry cough, with respiratory infections, with lung congestion, and even those with tuberculosis. Solomon's seal has a regulating effect on the heart muscle due to convalerin, a cardiac glycoside that it contains. In fact, the National Institutes of Health is currently looking into the use of Solomon's seal as an antihypertensive agent. Herbalist Matthew Wood says tiny doses, a drop or two, of the tincture is incredible. incredible heart tonic. Solomon's Seal is very helpful in those who are recovering from surgery or from cancer treatment. Those who feel like they have too much to do. It is moistening, so anytime there's dryness of any of the tissues, Solomon's Seal is thought of. Parched mouth, all right, ulcers in the digestive tract, irritable bowel, ulcerative colitis, heartburn, inflammation in the digestive tract, diarrhea. Solomon's Seal relieves hemorrhoids. It can help to get rid of scabies and the erysipelas. It soothes and moisturizes internally and externally, moisturizing the skin, the vagina, the uterus, the lungs, the throats, the digestive system, strengthening the musculoskeletal system, removing pain and discomfort, preventing encountering infection, helping to rebuild strength and well-being after a severe sickness. It aids in keeping a chiropractic adjustment in place, promotes spitting or coughing up a phlegm, lightens menstrual bleeding, moderates hot flashes, soothes and reduces nerve irritation, nervousness, and emotional distress, and is a very mild diuretic. Solomon's Seal root contains allantoin, which is also present in comfrey root, which is a tremendous skin healer. And it is used topically on open wounds, burns, sprains, strains, tears. And if you take the fresh root and steep it in water overnight, you can use it as a splash on your face to get rid of freckles, spots, and wrinkles. Don't eat the berries. They can cause you to throw up and have other bad side effects. Three amazing, interesting roots. Devil's Club, Sarsaparilla, and Solomon's Seal. I'll be right back.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Adaptogens. Devil's Club, Solomon's Seal, and Sarsaparilla's secret adaptogens, perhaps called alteratives. What is an adaptogen anyhow? Well, you know what? Nobody really knows. I was talking to David Winston, wonderful herbalist, and as you recall, the author of one of the best books on adaptogens. The other best book is by Donnie Yan. It's a pretty heavy tome. David's is a little more accessible. And yes, you can find it at wisewomanbookshop.com. I want you to have access to David Winston's fabulous book. And when I was talking to him, he was saying, well, it has, you know, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, the adrenal axis, right, the HPA axis, and it has to, you know, hit on all of those. And so some of the things we were calling adaptogens, maybe we're not going to call adaptogens anymore. I think it's interesting and lovely. But I like the older definition, which is an adaptogen is basically a harmless herb that can be taken for years and years and years on a regular basis without causing any side effects besides continued good health, freedom from chronic diseases, including mental acuity as we age, and that doesn't have a direction of action, that adaptogens lower high blood pressure and raise low blood pressure, that they take away cholesterol that's too high but leave alone cholesterol that's just right. They adapt just as we do. From David Winston's book, finding the compounds that produce bioactive adaptogenic effects is challenging and complex. Some studies have shown that the components that we thought were the main active ingredients of an adaptogen actually aren't. That the active ingredients are an unrelated mixture of various, sometimes common plant constituents, not the strange ones that we're finding in the plants. In recent years, Russian, Japanese, and South American researchers have discovered potent anabolic properties in specific plants that contain a phytosterol known as ecdysterone. sterols, you recall, are solid steroid alcohols, such as cholesterol, that are present in plants and animals. Preliminary research has shown that certain plant sterols do have adaptogenic biological activity. Ding, ding, that's what we've been looking at in devil's club, sarsaparilla, and Solomon seal. And it may be that the phytosterols are responsible for improved athletic performance and muscle growth that we see happens with regular use of adaptogens. Only a few adaptogens have been tested for plant sterol complexes, so we still aren't completely sure which ones have or don't have it. We know that Guiducci and Raponicum have tested positive for these sterols, as well as the South American plant Suma, which is Passia paniculata, which is another secret adaptogen. Current research has found that plant compounds with adaptogenic properties fall into two classes. They are either terpenes or polyphenols. Polyphenols include things like flavonoids, and many of them are antioxidants. Terpenes are the larger group, and terpenes enable plants to prosper in a specific environment. Terpenes include things like saponins, and saponins include a particular class called triterpenoids. Did we hear that word earlier? We did. Yes, triterpenoids. When Israel Brackham was first studying adaptogens, he understood that the active components that he was finding in most of the adaptogenic plants were triterpenoid saponins, and that these saponins had very low toxicity and basically no addictive potential at all. Some triterpenoid saponins have been identified as having adaptogenic properties. In addition, they are anti-inflammatory, hepatoprotective, and immune system modulating. Some of them strengthen the adrenal gland. So, we certainly cannot say that every single plant that contains phytosterols is an adaptogen, and that's partly because phytosterols are very widely spread across the plant kingdom, with every seed and every root containing some phytosterols. But we're starting to look a little more closely at what these phytosterols are. And tonight we've learned about two of them, those interesting triterpenoid saponins, which is actually a whole bunch of them, and that Wolzen anti-stiffness factor. Adaptogens that we know that contain triterpenoid saponins include American ginseng, Asian ginseng, astragalus, dangshen, eleutherococcus, holy basil, also known as tulsi, jogulan, licorice, and reishi mushrooms. And you also remember that that plant that we started with, Devil's Club, has been shown to have the same compounds. And so we say goodbye to our luxurious and long foray into the world of adaptogens, and we throw ourselves into the fruit bowl. 2019 is going to be a fruitful year. We are going to look at the hundreds and hundreds of different fruits that grow all over and see about picking some fruit for ourselves. I was astonished when I was told by elder herbalist in Costa Rica that there are over 500 different edible fruits in Costa Rica alone. Oh my goodness, I don't know if I've even ever tasted 500 different fruits. Well, we will be looking at common fruits and some exotic fruits as well next year. I hope that you have a delicious time with your family and with your holidays, and that as we end one calendar year and start another, that all of your wishes come true. This wraps up another show here at HealthyLife.net. Thank you for opening your mind, your ears, and your heart to me, and to the wise woman way of healing by nourishing. This is Susan Weed, the voice of the wise woman tradition, wishing you green blessings until we meet again at HealthyLife.net.